when you can't decide on a thing, pick the side with the fewest assholes on it, and you quite often come out okay at the far end of the process.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Bad Voltage. Hope you're all doing well. I'm joined here with my compadre, Mr. Stuart Ian Langridge, who I realize, I think you and I have been friends now for about 26 years.
Something like that, yeah. 25 years or something. It's a long time.
We might be getting old.
What's more worrying, I believe... I'm not sure where the crossover point was, but it must have been relatively recently when I ran over a point where I've known you for more of my life than I didn't know you for.
Oh, yeah.
That's a
good point.
Because it's about 25 years and I'm not 50. So,
yeah.
But equally, I'm nearly 50. So I'm not a million miles away from being 50. So I reckon the crossover point was in the last year. We could probably work it out. Like, how would we know? When did I first go? It would have been a Wolverhampton Lug meeting.
It was, yeah. And it would have been in 2001.
Right, okay. So
I think it was.
Okay, so that's, we moved to the area in late-ish 2000. I think it was after Neve was born. So
Neve in my head will always be a little girl.
Dude, she's 24.
Which is in itself terrifying.
It's disturbing, isn't
getting
it?
This show on a breezy note. We're all getting old, everyone.
I know, right? Check it out. She is not that much older than not that much younger rather than I was when I met you, so presumably there's a Jono out there for her to meet and for that person to ruin her life. So anyway, as you may have noticed, people listening to this, there's only the two of us because Jeremiah Obadiah Jackanory Jones is sadly not well, which is rather rubbish.
Yeah, he's under the weather.
Yeah,
with seemingly everybody else in New York now. The flu. Is the flu bad over there? Because Erica had it last week.
I was knocked out to the point of walking into town. I had to stop a couple of times for a breather. Right,
wow.
And you've been to my house. Well, I live in the city.
Yeah. You're in the town.
Yeah, all of
walking to the town is like just outside of
my
flat.
Front door. Yeah, literally a 5 or 10 minute walk, and I had to stop halfway up a hill for a rest. It was really, quite, and everyone here has been unwell. So 2025 has not started great from an illness point of view. So, Jeremy, get well soon. Drink Lemsip.
Yes, get well soon. And he's famously bad for not going to the doctor, just like you. So he'll be suffering in silence and not gaining any kind of medical treatment for whatever he's got. Well, but it's probably just the flu.
I feel I should point out, in the interest of balance, listener, that Jono goes to the doctor enough for all three of us.
I do. I don't like going to the doctor, but I do it a lot.
You do? That surprises me for someone who spends more time there than he does in his own living room.
You got to participate in your own health.
Hi, I think I might have a fear of rectangles. Could you diagnose that for me, please?
How did you know I have a fear of rectangles?
I'm not sure what the Greek name for it is. Anyway, so we're going to talk about some of the news that's going on. Not all of it, because... First of all, a lot has gone on. And secondly, some of these things, as you might have noticed, as we record this on the 22nd of January, 2025, a lot of stuff is kind of in flux at the moment. And so things like what the hell is happening with TikTok is being shelved for a later show, because at the moment... It's wildly, lots of interesting stuff is being talked about. Is the American government going to buy a share in a commercial company? Is this, which sounds like a terrible idea, and is it going to get banned, or is it going to get sold to someone else, or is there going to be an appeal, and blah, 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 blah. But we don't know how any of the stagger is going to unwind on this stuff, because we're right in the middle of it.
And honestly, we kind of need the Bad Voltage research department for this
also,
one.
Also,
and the research department is currently in bed watching The View. So
having Jeremy there to backstop some of the windier speculation would not be a bad idea, don't get me wrong. So we're going to punt that one to the next show, and then hopefully there will be a little more clarity on that. But we have other things to talk about. So why don't you kick us off?
All right. Well, one that I thought was interesting was yesterday, as we record this, Donald Trump, Larry Ellison from Oracle, Massey, I forget his last name, the CEO of SoftBank. And then Sam Altman from OpenAI announced something called Project Stargate, which is, I believe, a $500 billion investment in AI in the US. Now, from what I understand, I watched the announcement. From what I understand, this is primarily going to be building a whole bunch of data centers around the US. And because AI is obviously so computationally intensive, that in itself requires infrastructure, right? It requires like a lot of electricity, for example.
And water.
So the idea of this, which is obviously, you know, everybody knows that Donald Trump bangs on and on and on about bringing manufacturing, whatever else, back to the US. But clearly this is about the backbone of AI being in the US. And I just thought it was kind of interesting. Now, what I don't know is how much of our taxes go towards this, how much of this is, obviously there's a SoftBank contribution element to this as well. But overall, to me, this seems like a good idea that, you know, that the infrastructure behind AI is going to be in the US or in, you know, wherever it might be. And not just if we think about manufacturing in a conventional sense, like most stuff these days is made in China because it's cheaper. And I imagine that in the AI world that there's a bit of a war of like, you know, fundamentally the AI companies right now that are going to succeed, one, they need good talent. Two, they need a good product. But three, they need computing power, right? So the idea of providing this over or having a place in the US where computing power can be provided seems like a good idea. What I don't know is how are they going to do this in a cost-effective capacity, right? So what do you think?
So I got a bunch of thoughts. As far as I can tell, because I wondered this myself, looking into it, your tax money isn't going into it, I don't think. So the $500 billion number has been bandied around a lot, but the initial companies who are involved, people, by the way, who think SoftBank, I've heard of them, but I can't remember why. They're the people who bought Arm, among other things. Those companies have said we're putting out $100 billion immediately. It's very unclear to me whether the other $400 billion is sort of we might do that or we're definitely going to do it or what. And as far as I can tell, it's all investment money. Equally, those people don't have free money. And $500 billion is a lot of cash in anyone's spreadsheet. And so there is a whole big question about where that money's coming from. There is also a whole big question about what it's going on, because the fact that $100 billion is being spent to the America first bit of your argument does not mean it's being spent in America, because sure, they're building data centers, but a data center is basically a big, relatively cheap building which inhales water and destroys it, right? And inhales and inhales approximately, according to one thing I read, the amount of energy required to power a city.
Yep.
Right. But the bulk of it, the bulk of the money that's going into it, at least the bulk of the initial $100 billion, is going to be basically spent on custom new AI chips. And those custom new AI chips, are they going to be built in the US? I think no. Because.
No, well, is it custom chips, though? My impression here was that part of the.
OpenAI have. OpenAI are reportedly in talks with Broadcom to build custom chips, and they're talking about TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing, being the foundry for it. So
that's interesting, because in the AI, in the OpenAI announcement, they said that the partnership here is with ARM, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Oracle, and OpenAI.
Remember, ARM don't make chips. ARM write diagrams for purely, what chips
look like. Yeah, they build designs, right. So maybe that's what that is. But, and, you know, obviously, to your point, like, a data center is a big box of compute, right, in one way, right? So that a lot of that will be coming from NVIDIA. I'm guessing here that and again, we don't know, but I'm guessing here, and based on what I've seen online, that our taxes are not going towards, like, the American people will not be investors in this initiative. But what the government's probably going to do is just make it easier to build these data centers, to set up the infrastructure in those areas to enable electricity to be provided, high amounts of electricity to be provided. And of course, what this will do for Trump's government is going to be generate a lot of jobs, right? Like, he obviously wants that. So
it's not clear to me that it generates, you know, interesting jobs.
Why?
Which jobs?
Of course it's going to have interesting jobs.
Why?
Well, you're going to need people to operate and run these data centers.
Sure, but not that many.
I don't know. I mean, when this was announced, I mean, again, this is through Donald Trump's mouth, which is a mouth that is filled with inaccuracies and lies in many cases. They said something about like 100,000 jobs. So I'm guessing a lot of those are going to be mechanical jobs.
Nah, that's a whole bunch of speculative bollocks about once we've done this, it will produce these many jobs in the economy, which is a much more dubious statistic.
Of course. But what I'm saying is that let's say you build one data center. That data center is going to have a bunch of stuff in that data center, right? Sure. So you're going to need people to manage that data center, all the technology that sits inside of it. But around that, there's going to be, you're going to have restaurants to serve the people who are working in there. And you're going to need, if more electricity is required, then it's going to require people to work at the electricity plant that's going to generate the electricity that's going to serve that data center. So there's going to be that knock-on impact. And to me, that's a good thing, because yes, you'll have like more kind of like advanced jobs, like the kind of people who are managing all the compute. You'll have a job for a local student who'll be working in the salad bar around there, who will be feeding the people who are working in that data center. So to me, it seems good. Like, then every facet of society benefits.
A typical data center requires approximately 20 to 22 operational staff to run effectively. I mean, this is obviously...
this is not a typical data center.
No. These are bigger, don't get me wrong, but they're not qualitatively different, right?
Why do you say that?
Because a very, very large data center, the whole point is it's full of basically identical compute racks, right? Which means that you can think of a data center which is four times as big as being four independent data centers all built next to one another, roughly, right? I mean, I'm hand-waving a bit here, but not tons.
Yeah, hand-waving a lot.
I don't think I am. But
this is the waviest of wavy hands.
This is exactly my point. And they're talking about building, you know, five. So even...
Right, but what I'm saying is we don't know. For all we know... I mean, look, if you're going to be putting in total within 4 years, $500 billion into these data centers, where AI is by definition, like effectively the next industrial revolution in technology. There's no doubt about that, right? It's going in that direction. The genie's out of the lamp. I think this is going to result. I think 100,000 jobs is not an unusual, but I don't think it's going to be necessarily specific to that data center. Again, it's going to be related to manufacturing the bits that go into the data center, into the electrical plants. It's going to be into the reservoirs where the water's coming from. It's going to be the restaurants and the, all the kind of the operation stuff that wraps around it. It's going to be that broader impact. In the same way that when there's an Amazon fulfillment center, or there's a factory that makes cars, you know, all of that stuff wrapped around it is part of those jobs. In the same way that when the pandemic happened and all those offices shut down in San Francisco, it didn't just kill the offices. It killed all the little restaurants and bars and, you know, sandwich shops and whatever else around it as well. So I think it's going to have that impact.
I do not think you want to use an Amazon fulfillment center as your example, since all the jobs it creates are people who have to piss in a bottle because they're not allowed
breaks. You're taking my example too far. I'm not saying that's what this is going to be like.
No, but I think you're taking it too far in the other direction, because I think a lot of the jobs that this creates are not actually particularly good jobs. I mean,
define
sure,
good job.
Something that pays well and is not exploitative.
So give me an example of a job that pays well, is not exploitative. Give me an example of a job that pays well, is exploitative.
Okay, so your job.
Which one?
I wondered if you were going to say that. You are not exploited by anybody, Jonathan Bacon. Yourself and maybe your family, but that is your own problem entirely, right?
Yeah.
But think about you want to be able to have things like have a union to represent you, get decent holiday, right? None of this stuff is guaranteed, especially from large companies, and increasingly, especially from large tech companies, for the bottom end of their staffing roster.
Well, give me an example in that scenario of like, so what would you describe? Let's say we talk about the Amazon fulfillment center,
yeah,
right? Are you saying that somebody who works in the Amazon, I'm presuming you're saying somebody who works in the Amazon fulfillment center has an exploitative job?
Yes. I have only actually spoken to two separate people who've actually worked them. I've read a bunch of stuff, but I've only actually sat down and spoken with two people, and both of them went, it's fucking horrible.
Right.
Think of the sorts of things that people used to talk about, factory jobs in Victorian times. Right?
Right.
It's like, it's that again.
But how is that exploitative? That's what I'm trying to understand. I'm not denying that it's a shit job and people don't want that job and it's a boring job and it's primarily, you're moving things from one part of the center to another. Not denying that people will hate that job, but how is it exploitative if somebody opts into that job and that pay?
Because when they open something big like that, all the other stuff around it shuts down.
Like what?
What do you mean, like what? If you build a fulfillment center, you're not going to build it in the center of Chicago, right?
Right.
Or if you build a great big data center, you're not going to build it in the center of Chicago. You're going to build it out in the middle of nowhere, and then you're going to basically create company towns around it. Which means
not necessarily.
Yeah, I totally think that's exactly what it's going to be.
We have an Amazon fulfillment center about 20 minutes from where we live.
Okay, go and ask everyone.
There's loads of jobs.
Who works in there. Why they don't just get a better job?
Well, actually, I know somebody who works there. Well, that's not true. I know somebody indirectly who works there. I know their mum. And he wanted to go and work there because the schedule works for him, because on the side is like wanting to start basically a video editing business. So his view has been, it's an incredibly boring job. The pay is okay. But for him, it works out well. Now, I'm not saying that is everybody's experience, but my point is that there are still loads of other jobs for somebody who is primarily going to be doing manual labor, say, in the area. There's jobs in restaurants and in factories and whatever else. Just because you set up an Amazon fulfillment center or one of these data centers doesn't mean that everything else vanishes. I could understand you saying exploitative if you're in a town and there's nothing within 100 miles of where you live. And there is an Amazon fulfillment center, and that's literally the only employment opportunity, and they underpay you. I would agree with you, but I don't think that's the case.
I had not looked because it didn't occur to me to check exactly where this thing in Abilene is meant. So the first one is supposed to be in Abilene in Texas, but I don't know if it says where it's going to be. So I'm just looking. So talk amongst yourselves for a second.
Okay.
While I
this is the data center you're talking about, the first ones they're going to put in place.
Yeah, they've talked about, you know, building five or whatever. The first one, I don't believe they've talked about locations for the others, whether they know them or not, I don't know. But the first one, the data center is already under construction here in Texas, so says Larry Ellison. But I don't know where it's under construction.
Right, and Abilene, according to this, is relatively close to Fort Worth and Dallas.
Doesn't give the Lancium Clean Campus outside Abilene, Texas. Okay, so let's go and have a look on the map. Can we see where this is on the map?
Well, when I say it's relatively close to Fort Worth, it's 2 hours from Fort Worth. It's, in fact,
oh, right, you see, that, I mean, that's a company town, my man.
Sure. I'm not denying that it is, but Abilene has got 120,000 people living there. And what I'm saying is, I think you're just making the assumption that, oh, big company sets up big data center or fulfillment center, therefore exploitation.
Yes, I am.
And what I'm saying is,
I am making that assumption. And you have to justify that that's not the case.
No, that's not the way the world works. You have to justify. You're essentially committing. You're essentially accusing Amazon of effectively of a crime.
Yes.
So you need to provide the evidence of that crime. I don't have to provide the evidence of them not providing the crime. That's not how justice works.
So, okay, then. So if we're looking for crimes they've committed, if you look at who's meant to stand up against this kind of thing, your union. And why hasn't that happened for Amazon? Because they won't permit one and break unions that try to set up.
Oh, I'm not denying that Amazon do shitty business things. I'm not denying that for a second. What I'm saying is the crime.
That's my point. That's got to be your. But I think there's been enough evidence of that happening that the baseline level assumption is not that they're basically good and these are aberrations. It's that they're a terrible employer and sometimes they do okay, which is why I'd like to justify why this is going to be different from a whole bunch of other Amazon business practices. I still can't find where this campus is. It just talks about, it's all great, the Abilene Clean Campus, but I can't find a picture of it on a map anywhere. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
But let me give you an example, right? There are three Amazon centers on the outskirts of Charlotte, right? There's one such example.
I don't know where that is.
Charlotte's in North Carolina.
Okay.
So
I don't even really know where that is, but all right, no worries.
East coast of the US.
Okay, thank you.
So, and again, we have one near here. Again, I want to be very clear about this. I'm not saying that Amazon are not shitty employers and that the jobs are not really boring. And that, having that job is probably a bit soul destroying because it's just not very interesting. My point here is I think the accusation that if you have one of these centers set up that somehow all of the job opportunities are gone is ludicrous. I just don't think that's true.
It's not that the job is boring, right? If it was just a mindless job, I wouldn't have called it exploitative, right? I'm literally just looking at a report from Oxfam, right? 53% of Amazon warehouse workers feel a sense of being watched or monitored in their work always or most of the time. 56% anxious or depressed at least several days over the previous 2 weeks. 64% are exhausted. Over half,
I believe all of that. Yeah.
And that's exactly my point. The baseline level assumption for this kind of thing has got to be that it's going to be likeless unless they demonstrate it's going to be different.
No. See, that's where I disagree with you. The baseline assumption is not that all companies who hire in these big centers are evil. We should prove that. And then when it's proven, it should be addressed, right?
I don't understand. So there will be all the stuff that you have seen, that we have seen about examples of this, if that doesn't prove it, what proof would be required?
No, what I'm saying is this, is that there will be factories all over the world, right?
Yep.
So you get to a certain point where you employ a certain number of people in one location.
Yep.
Right? And let's put aside information jobs. Like, let's just talk about like manual labor style jobs like we're talking about with Amazon fulfillment centers. Okay. So I think that it is reasonable, like let's use Amazon as an example, that you're pulling up evidence done by a third party, Oxfam, that's identified pretty abhorrent working conditions for Amazon Fulfillment Center workers, right?
Yep.
And I 100% believe that, right? I'm not defending Amazon for this. And I think in that situation, then they should be, action should occur to make humane working conditions. And I think you and I would both agree that it's fine to have a job that's boring, but it has to be humane, right? In what that, in how that job operates. So to me, there's 100%. I'm not challenging that for 1 second. The only thing that I'm challenging is that, just the very notion of having a group of people doing manual labor by definition means exploitative, that we assume ill intent as opposed to proven ill intent. That's one objection that I have. And the second one is, I just don't believe that there's, that stop. You said earlier on that there'll be no jobs, no other jobs nearby, right? So if we look at the example of Amazon in Charlotte, then to me, people could not work there and they could go and work somewhere else and get a job, presuming that there's similar types of jobs available in that area. So I wouldn't describe that as having that problem, but
that is so the word presuming in there is basically the hinge point for that particular thing. If they build one of these things somewhere where there's loads of other stuff and people can look at it and go, well, okay, it doesn't pay very well and it's pretty horrible and I can get a job somewhere else, then no one will go to work there. And then that's fine. Whatever. At that point, you've got to go,
well, people will go to work. No one will go to work there if the conditions are inhumane. Right, absolutely.
Which is exactly the point. 100%. And therefore, they will have to compete in the market to say, okay, how can we make people want to come to work here? And the answer will either be more money or better conditions or both. At which point, that's fine. My point is more that I think they're going to build these data centers in places where that largely isn't the case. In the same way that, you know, Bourneville in Birmingham was created by building the Cadbury factory there, right? I think they're essentially going to be, if you look at, there are, I can't remember any of the names off of the top of my head, but Walmart, I don't know about Amazon ones, but Walmart's big fulfillment centers, essentially everyone for 20 miles in every direction works there. Right. They're company towns. At which point, if you quit your job, you're completely sunk. There's nothing else you can do. And that's what I think a lot of these things are going to be like. But like I say, I can't prove that because I didn't research it and didn't think of it. And I can't find out where this Lancium clean campus is.
Well, and the thing is, as well as like, there's no doubt that, like, if you have very low levels of agency, right? Like, if you work in a, if you live in a tiny little town, you don't have hardly any money. You go and get a job at a fulfillment center that opens up nearby or one of these data centers, and the job is miserable and it's inhumane, right? But you don't have any money to move.
Yeah.
Or to go to the next town, and the next town is 3 hours away. I massively sympathize with that. And I agree with you that that is a real problem, right? I think there's something to be said about, like, look, if you've got a shit job, get a better job if you have the agency to do so. But not everybody's got the agency to do so.
That's the point. A lot of people don't have the agency to do so.
And I don't think you need a lot of money to do that. Like, it can be a small amount of money to go somewhere else. But I think the biggest thing that stands in the way of people doing that is usually kind of fear and worry about, like, making ends meet and stuff like that. So
I've just read here, it just says at full operation, the clean campuses, so this is Lancium.
What is Lancium?
They appear to be the company who's building the clean campus on which I believe this AI center is being built, but I might be wrong.
Okay, got it.
At full operation, the clean campuses will employ 57 full-time employees with an average salary of $67,000. So they're being paid okay, but there's only 57 of them.
I think we should talk about this for another 2 or 3 hours.
Well, I mean, seriously, we could do, but this is, we are short on enough information here, but my point is
that's never stopped us in the past. Though,
well, my key point here is that I do not think there is necessarily reason to be optimistic about this. Now, I freely admit I take the more pessimistic side on stories like this and always have done. But I think there are a bunch of reasons why this is potentially not great, and they're not being talked about that much by comparison with all the news articles saying $500 billion into AI in America. And it's not at all clear to me that that's actually the case.
And I would say that you are traditionally on this show more cynical about these things. There's nothing wrong with that. But also, you've historically been just generally pretty anti-competitive, like big company especially. So when big companies are involved, your cynicism radar goes, you know, starts flickering.
I'll buy anti-corporate. I don't think I'm anti-competitive. The opposite. I'm pro-competition. I'm anti-people stopping competition. But yes.
Yeah.
I know what you meant.
And I'd say it's primarily bigger companies. Like you are generally not as cynical with smaller companies.
It's a lot harder to, screw people over by policy if there's only nine of you.
Right. Because it's worth a shot though. Just kidding.
You know, let me know how John O'Bacon Consulting goes on that front.
I'm trying to be a dictator, but it's not working very well.
Doesn't work that well. But yeah, no. So we'll see how this pans out, but
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
I'm not convinced it will improve things for normal people. And I do think it might unimprove them because, for example, where's all the money coming from to pay for this? And one of the places is that Microsoft appear to be jacking up the cost of their 365 packages by 50%. So that's going to cheer up a whole bunch of people who just need to write Word documents, isn't it? But, you know.
Well, and this is where AI, without turning this into a much broader AI conversation, like one of the things that Larry Ellison talked about, which I do buy this, is he said, you know, one of the great benefits of this is that it's going to create so much more computing power to enable like more complex AI workloads. And one of the key areas that they're focusing on is finding remedies for various diseases. Like they are of the view that like finding, cures for like certain types of cancers is going to be much faster. And we're already starting to see this within AI. So on one hand, you know, there is the, oh shit, AGI, Terminator 2 kind of like pretty scary future of AI, which I think we're all alive to. But there will be a series of benefits that I think will hit regular people more broadly. But that's less about specifically the data centers. That just enables AI in general, right? So
that's a future. That's what I meant by the, you know, it's going to create all these jobs is future speculative stuff. And that's the same. Sure, if that happens, that'd be great. But I also think it's possible that it just straight up doesn't happen. And 2 years from now, everyone goes, man, this stuff showed so much promise. And then when we actually pushed it into real areas, it just didn't work. That's rubbish, isn't it? Like, you know,
I have no doubt that this will be successful.
For example, someone who thought that hydrogen powered cars was going to be the thing, right? And sure, maybe it could still work and maybe the technology could happen, but it just didn't take off. Haha, not the cars meant to take off, mix my metaphors. But it's that kind of thing where it just sort of fizzled out when it came to the crunch and now it's basically nowhere. And I think it's entirely possible that all this LLM stuff might do the same thing. Maybe it wouldn't.
People are already integrating it into that. It's already had a massive impact. And there is no doubt that this is going to be the next generation. To me, like, do you remember, when everyone was banging on and on about kind of like, blockchain and crypto and all that kind of stuff? And we had a pretty healthy amount of skepticism towards that. And by and large, like a lot of that stuff really kind of like the Web3 thing really kind of just shat itself, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen with AI. And the reason why is, AI has such a broad impact on literally everybody. Everybody can benefit from AI and these companies have invested so significantly in it that the individual implementations of it will vary. Like, I'm sure that some of these smart glasses will fizzle out and some of them will be successful. And some people, you know, those stupid, like, humane AI pins that came out.
Yes.
Like, they're not doing very well. But there's no doubt that AI is going to be helping most people in some capacity. And if, even if they don't use it directly, it'll happen on the back end.
I do think there is doubt about that. So we'll revisit this in 2 years and see who was right. I mean,
all right, Grandad.
Sure, if it works out.
These newfangled computers are not going to take off.
Well, no, interestingly, actually, there was an article in The Conversation, I think, a couple of days ago, saying that people who know more about AI are less likely to think it's good. The graph curve is inverted, right? If you don't know much about it, you tend to think, wow, that's going to be great and it's going to change stuff. The more you learn about it, the less you think it's a good idea, which I thought, don't look at me. I'm just telling you what the survey said, but you know,
the survey sounds like it's full of shit.
Well, I mean,
we know more than most about AI. You know, more than the average layperson, right? Not paying attention to AI. And I think I would argue, maybe you see it differently, that we've already seen multiple ways in which it's useful when it comes to, you know, summarizing information, making it more understandable, when it comes to people using AI for coaching, like, or content creation, as long as you feed it the right kind of stuff. There's no doubt there's value in it.
I am less prepared to stand behind the fact that on balance, it's a good idea than you are. Sure, I can point at positives, but I can also point at a load of negatives, and I still have not made up my mind on whether I think the positives outweigh. I'm not denying that the positives exist. I'm just saying I'm not necessarily sure that they're worth it.
Let me ask you a question, and this is a blunt question, and answer it honestly.
Yep.
I know your lion face. Do you think that view of AI, would you say that that's a logical view or an emotional view?
I think, and obviously this is, you know, internal view, and it's hard to be objective about your own mental processes.
Always true. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I believe I have actually looked at the pros and the cons of it, and that's why I'm still on the fence. I don't think this is secretly I think it's great, but I don't want to admit it because then a bunch of billionaires get pleased about the fact that I'm happy with it. I don't believe it's that. I think there's a lot of people ready to make accusations about that, but I don't believe it's that.
The only reason why I ask that question is that going back to the Web3 thing, if I'm being honest, I didn't evaluate that logically. I just thought it was stupid. And it was largely emotional, somewhat, if I'm being honest, a bit of a biased view on my side that I wasn't thinking logically about it. I just didn't like the idea of it. I'm not trying to pay attention to like whether I have an emotional view on something or actually a logical view. And sadly, more often than not, I have a bit of an emotional view about things.
Not necessarily as wrong as you might think it is. And it's not as wrong as the me of 15 years ago would have told you that it was, right? Doing your own careful evaluation of stuff is a good idea. But if you want a rule of thumb, when you can't decide on a thing, pick the side with the fewest assholes on it, and you quite often come out okay at the far end of the process. And that's actually not a bad policy, in my opinion.
We are going to brand this, everybody, Langridge's Law. It's a pretty good law. I like that. It's a good idea.
I tell you, right, it works more often than you might think if you were to evaluate things logically. Just look at the two sides.
This side has got a bunch of twats in it. I think I'm going to pick the other side.
Correct. And do you know what? It's not a bad policy, and it's serving me quite well.
I like that a lot. Yeah, it's a shortcut.
Yeah. And honestly, it's sure, it's not supposed to be a replacement for assessing all the sides equally, but you can't do a deep dive into everything.
Yeah, exactly. You've just got to make a judgment call sometimes.
Yeah, and this is the judgment call. You've got to decide what you're going to do deep dives into, and this thing is full of arseholes. I mean, the Web3 thing had nothing but arseholes and grifters involved in it. So there wasn't anyone in it who wasn't an arsehole or a grifter or an arsehole and a grifter. So that was an easy decision. But yeah. So anyway, there's honestly, AI is like social media in that if you just go, we're going to talk about this generally, we could go on about it for 25 shows. And possibly there are people who would to hear that, but we're not going to.
You know, why don't we see if we can do at least one more? Because we've got about 10 minutes. So what do you want to do next?
So I will try to do a – I can't decide whether this is a quick one or not. This could be a really big one. And this is one where I'd be interested to hear Jeremy's viewpoint about it as well.
Yeah.
So we might want to come back to this when and if it happens. But the UK government are debating making it illegal to pay ransomware payments.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
And obviously, if you put more than 1 second of thought into it, the reason for this is because eventually it decreases the it stops people being targeted. So people stop targeting UK companies with ransomware payments because they don't get the payout. Obviously, this completely buggers up anyone who gets targeted in the interim. And the question is, is that a reasonable price to pay to actually stop the problem? There's no good answer here, right? The good answer is stop people targeting UK companies and UK public sector organisations with ransomware stuff. And if we knew how to do that, obviously we'd be doing it.
Doesn't it seem like it's solving kind of the wrong problem? Because the problem is the people who are...
It is, but we don't know
building
how to...
ransomware.
Sure, yes, but we don't know how to solve that problem. Which is exactly.
Well, we probably do know how to solve that problem, don't we? I mean, someone's got to have an idea. I've not looked into it, but someone must know.
Why? You're a smart guy. Why? How would you stop people committing crimes? If you've got an idea, don't keep it to yourself. Right. You see my point. Yes, no one thinks this is the best thing that should be done in the best of all possible worlds. What this is an attempt to do, at least in my perception of it, is to long-term mitigate the damage by making the crime uneconomical. And I mean, it's a pretty brutally pragmatic approach to this thing, because obviously they know, right? The people who are doing this kind of thing are not stupid. They're not going, you know what, we're happy to just let all them people burn because we hate them. It's obviously... yeah, this is terrible and we really don't like it, but we haven't got a better option. And 10 years from now, when everyone stopped paying ransomware payments, we've beaten that out of people, then people will stop being targeted for ransomware payments because they don't work. This is, I mean, if you were pushing the thing if you were massively overstretching a metaphor, this is what prison is for, right? In general. Like, the concept of retributive justice is there to attempt to persuade people not to do crimes in the future.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested in your...
Well, it's a combination of restorative and
This is not the goal of restorative justice. And obviously restorative justice designs to persuade people not to do this by making them not want to do it in the first place. And sure, that is the... put someone in a position where they don't want to extort hospitals for ransomware payments because they go, why would I do that? I've got a nice job and a nice family and a house by the river. At which point, why would I bother? Yeah, I understand that.
Right.
But that does not appear to be on the table, or at least no one knows how to do it. And we've been trying for a long time. Like,
but when it comes to the ransomware, it seems to me like, I mean, I know this is a very generalized statement, but it seems like the solution to this is that the law enforcement authorities just need to, I mean, fundamentally need to figure out like who's creating this malware, and take those people down, right? This is, I mean, that's fundamentally what the solution is. My worry about making it illegal for people to pay, on one hand, I get the logic of it, but it's really going to depend on what the penalty for paying this is. Because let's say you get some malware that basically says you're going to lose access to all of your passwords, right? Or you're going to lose access to a whole bunch of like data that will destroy your company if it's leaked or if it's deleted. And let's say the penalty for paying ransomware is, you know, a week in the slammer. People are just going to be like, I'm willing to take the week in the slammer, but I'm not willing to let my company go.
Now, see, here's the question, because I'm not sure that's the case at all, right? If it's your company, maybe, but almost everyone who works at a company, it's not their company. And the distinction is between the company loses $100,000 or $100 million or whatever, and you personally, because you can't put a company in jail.
Right.
Right. So but
even if it's not, even if it's like personal, like let's say, you know, somebody gets access to your phone and there's a bunch of pictures of you, you know, shaking hands with the unemployed, shall we say, on your phone.
Thank you for preserving the, any babies listening to this with a not very transparent metaphor.
Roughing up the suspect, as it might be known.
Enough this conversation. Then,
like, and you don't want that being posted on Twitter, right? Then my point is that the prevention of you paying it has to be so significant that you're willing to.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
it's an impossible decision to be in for a victim.
Yes. I mean, like I say, anyone who gets whipsawed in between this, assume, right? Spot me for the moment an extremely dubious assumption, which is that it works, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
10 years from now, people are no longer bothering to target UK public sector organisations with ransomware because they know they're not going to get the money. So they either find some other way to extort money out of other people or they target people outside the UK, whatever, doesn't matter. Spot me that it works.
Yeah.
Everyone involved in even vaguely floating this discussion is well aware that we're going to kick a whole shed load of companies directly in the balls for the next 10 years until we get to that point. I don't think anyone's disputing that.
You
know, the question is, how much are you prepared to pay to stop the ransomware problem as a whole, which cost the economy £1 billion last year, apparently. So yikes. this is not a small amount of problem they're talking about here.
Yeah, significant. Right? Yeah.
Yes, I don't think anybody is disputing that it will be absolutely terrible if you get targeted for this. But then again, it's absolutely terrible now. Right? At the moment, sure, you're not going to go to jail for handing over the money, but you've still got to hand over the money.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're going, we'll unencrypt all of your encrypted files if you pay us £10 either. £1 billion. So, yeah, as I say, I honestly don't know.
It's an impossible decision. It's an impossibly difficult. I mean, because like,
this is why I'm glad I'm not Minister for Justice like my MP is.
Yeah, you should do that though. You'd be great. You would be good.
I am exactly the reason I would not be interested. Apart from all the other reasons, I wouldn't be interested in doing it. Exactly the reason I would not be interested in doing it is something like this, where they go, "Okay, here are 5 bad answers. You have to pick one of them." It's up to you which you pick, but you have to pick one. One of them is going to be don't do anything and carry on like we are. And that's got costs £1 billion written at the bottom of it. And another one is send a whole shedload of people who basically were not at fault and were innocent bystanders to prison, which is intolerably unjust. And
yes.
And like, there's no good answer here. So I honestly don't know what I think.
I, if you became Minister of Justice, what I want to see is your unique brand of language justice that you bring. I'd like to see just there'd be a dramatic drop in people putting fruit in beer. Because that would be a pretty significant punishment.
That would be, unfortunately, you do that one time, you go to prison for 100 years. So,
but yeah, I mean, it's a good point.
I'll do prison abolition apart from that. We'll keep Wormwood Scrubs open just for that.
I agree with you. Like, I mean, this seems to me like something that's worth trying, you know, to see if it works. Because like you said, if it works, then it could have a massive impact and it would reduce the amount of ransomware, which would then prevent people going to jail innocently for it. It would take the power out of these ransomware people.
But sometimes
there is no good solution, right?
No. If someone came in and said, right, Jono has taken a position on this, your job is to take the opposing position and argue with him, I could do it quite happily on either side. And
yeah,
I genuinely don't know what I actually think. Like, yeah, what do I think is
same
correct
here?
Fascinating. Because the whole point of being the Secretary of State for Justice is that you don't get to go, I don't know, so I'm not going to make any decisions. Like, literally, you have one job, and it was to make decisions about this. That's why we elected you as an MP.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be difficult when fundamentally, if you make quote unquote the right decision, when the right decision is still massively flawed.
Yeah, totally. You know? and people tend not to respond well to politicians going on telly and going, well, I did the best of a bad thing. Sorry about all those people who got screwed, but yeah, here's my reasoning. Because you never get a chance to put that reasoning, because half of the time it's all bollocks anyway.
And I would like them to, honestly, I'd like politicians to come out and say, look, like, we had two options here. Both of them are shit. We went with option number one because it's marginally less shit than option number two.
No one ever does that because all the PR
no one's
people will
do
say
that.
You are not allowed to admit fault and you're not allowed to say things are bad in any way. It's extremely annoying and I wish they'd stop it, but they are.
I wish they'd stop it too. Well, this seems like a good area, a good thing for people to provide some feedback in the old Bad Voltage community. Go to let us know what you think about this.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what people think. We will link to the some of the mentioned stories in the show notes when I wrote them.
Yep. And then we'll see what I would love to get a sense of what Jeremy. You're right. Like, be interesting to hear what Jeremy thinks about this.
Yeah, because on some stuff, you know, there are some things where you two take one side and I take the other. There's some things where Jeremy and I take one side and you take the other.
Yeah.
But on stuff like this, I think we are a three cornered shape, right? We are a triangle. Yeah. We are quite different from one another on all of these stuff. So, yes. Yep. So hopefully he will be back in the next show. Hopefully he will recover. But best wishes go out to you, Jeremy.
Yes.
And meanwhile, we will hand this show over to Marius, who will mix it, who is our audio producer and is at nerdzoom.media and is,
yes,
and is really
thank
good.
You, Marius.
And hopefully this time the audio quality from Jono is a little better after.
Keep your fingers crossed.
I was dragged over the coals, but I'm like, it's not even me, right? He's a proper audio engineer. How can he not do this? All I do is just I spent 6 months talking into the wrong side of this microphone and it was apparently still better than you last time. So we apologize to listeners. Marius did what he could to rescue it.
I decided recently to outsource my bollockings. So thank you for taking
apparently, I'm not stepping in the way of the next one. If you've done it again, I'm just going to tell him to talk to you directly. But yes, thank you very much to Marius, who puts up with a lot from us.
Yes,
so
thank you, Marius.
If you want someone who is both talented and tolerant, go talk to nerdzoom.media because they're brilliant.
Yep.
And we'll see you in the next show.
See you in the next one.